Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the bidder information session for the March 2024 solicitation. This is the 7th solicitation under PECO's 5th default service program, or DSP-5 as I'll call it in this presentation. My name is Katie Orlandi, and presenting with me today is Matt Pettit. We are from NERA Economic Consulting, who serves as the independent evaluator for PECO's DSP-5. And with us today are representatives from PECO who will be available to help answer questions you may have at the conclusion of the presentation. So in today's presentation, we're going to provide an overview of the DSP-5 program, details on the qualification and bidding process, and we'll also cover solicitation-specific information, including the products available, and then we'll go through a calendar with deadlines. So all lines have been placed on mute, but you can ask text questions to us throughout the presentation. In order to do that, please email your question to us at PECOProcurement@nera.com. Also, if you have any technical difficulties during the presentation, please also go ahead and email us at this email address and someone will be in touch to help. So before we start, I'd like to note that any statements herein describing or referring to documents and agreements are summaries only, and they're qualified in their entirety by reference to such governing documents. The governing documents are the Pennsylvania Public Utilities Commission order related to PECO's 5th default service program from December 3rd, 2020, the RFP rules and the addendum to the RFP rules that were posted on December 21st, 2023, and January 31st, 2024, respectively. Also, the PECO Energy Company Pennsylvania Default Service Supplier Master Agreement, or Uniform SMA, as we'll refer to this document, which was posted on February 1st. All of these documents are currently posted. They're available on PECOProcurement.com. You'll find documents related to DSP-5 proceeding with the commission on the regulatory page, and then the RFP documents and contracts are posted to the supplier information page. So as I mentioned, NERA serves as the third-party independent evaluator for the solicitations under DSP-5. Our role is to ensure a transparent process for the RFP. Specifically, we're the main point of contact for RFP bidders. We ensure the RFP rules that were approved by the commission are followed and the qualifications are evaluated equitably and fairly. We evaluate the bids on a price-only basis, and then we will present the results to the commission. So the agenda for today's call is as follows. In the first half of the presentation, I'm going to cover DSP-5 and the products that are available this March. I'll provide an overview of the RFP process and the contract and rates. Then I'll pass the presentation to Matt, and he'll continue with the RFP process details. That includes the requirements to qualify to bid and the bid submission procedures. Matt can also provide an overview of the RFP website and then how you can get contact with us. At the end of the presentation, we'll take questions. Again, if you have a question, you can email us throughout the presentation to PECOProcurement@nera.com. So under DSP-5, PECO procures full requirements service for their default service customers. As listed in bullet 4, full requirements service includes energy, capacity, ancillary services, certain transmission services, and alternative energy portfolio standard, or AEPS, requirements. Default service customers are those customers that do not elect to take service from an electric generation supplier or who return to PECO after receiving service from an EGS. Under DSP-5, solicitations are held in March and September of each year throughout 2024 for a total of 8 solicitations. And the supply to be procured under DSP-5 is for the period of June 1, 2021 to May 31st, 2025, but some contracts do extend beyond June 2025. Under DSP-5, products are procured for 3 classes, as shown in this table, and in this March solicitation, there are products available for all 3 classes. The residential class consists of all residential customers. The small commercial class is commercial customers with less than 100 kW of annual peak demand. The consolidated large commercial and industrial class consists of commercial customers with 100 kW or greater of annual peak demand. This slide provides the product characteristics for each of the classes. So suppliers for the residential and small commercial classes are paid on a fixed price basis, which is based on the supplier's average winning bid price for each megawatt hour of load served. So the bid price is an all-in price. These two classes are served via laddered and overlapping 1-year and 2-year contracts that are procured twice a year. Suppliers for the CCI class are paid on the basis of 3 components. It's energy price to PJM's day ahead market at the PICO residual aggregate zone, capacity obligations priced to PJM's reliability pricing model, and then the supplier's average winning bid price for each megawatt hour of load served in the RFP. The product for the CCI class is for 12 months, starting with the upcoming June 1. So for each class, the default load is divided into a number of tranches so that each tranche represents a fixed percentage of the load for the class. For the residential class, there are a total of 62 tranches, and each tranche represents 1.6% of the default load for this class. There are 24 tranches for the small commercial class, and each tranche represents 4.17%. And then there's 8 tranches total for CCI class, with each tranche representing 12.5% of the load. This slide provides here the total and default peak information and an approximate megawatt measure for each class. This data was updated as of December 2023, and it's applicable to the 2024-25 planning year. So there are products available for all 3 classes in this solicitation, as I mentioned. The naming convention for each product is as follows. There's 3 labels. First, the customer class served. Second is the length of the supply period. And then third is the date of the start of the supply period. So there's 2 products available in this solicitation for the residential class. There's a 12 and 24 month product. The supply period for both of these products starts on June 1, 2024. Same thing for small commercial. The available tranches are for 12 and 24 month products starting June 1, 2024. And finally, there's a 12 month product for the CCI class also starting on June 1, 2024. There are load caps that apply so that a supplier cannot supply more than 50% of the default load for a class at any point in time. The load caps in this solicitation do account for products that were won in prior solicitations under DSP 5 and have a supply period that overlap with the supply of the products available in this solicitation. And so you know, housekeeping item, all information that pertains to information, but to products that are available in this solicitation, such as the number of tranches available and the load caps, they're all available on the website within the addendum to the RFP rules. So on this slide, we provide the available tranches and load caps for the residential class. So for the 12-month product, there are 12 available tranches, and for the 24-month product, there are 9 available tranches. As I mentioned before, there's a total of 62 tranches for this class with a load cap of 50%. So in the case of the residential class, load caps are calculated as 62 times 50% minus the tranches that a supplier is currently serving for products with a supply period that overlaps the upcoming supply period. So these products that overlap with the upcoming supply period are listed in the table here. So any current default supplier that are serving these products can use this table to determine its bidder specific load cap. And we will also provide these load caps to bidders in the bid form that we provide during the application process. Load caps are calculated the same way for the small commercial class. There are 2 products available. 6 tranches are available for the 12-month product. 3 tranches are available for the 24-month product. As for load caps, there's a total of 24 tranches for this class. So suppliers are constrained on the number of tranches they can bid to 12 minus the number of tranches they're serving for the products in this table. For the CCI class, there's 8 tranches available. There are no overlapping contracts for this class, so all suppliers are capped at 4 tranches. PJM's base residual auction for the 2025-26 delivery year was delayed due to proceedings with FERC and will not be held prior to the bid date in March 2024. There are FERC orders available in both proceedings. The dockets are provided here. So the BRA for the 25-26 delivery year would provide a visible capacity price for the last 12 months of the 24-month product. That capacity price will not be available at the point of the bid date. So bidders offering to supply the 24-month products are entirely responsible for any uncertainty related to the lack of visibility of the capacity price for that delivery year. As a final note, before I move to the RFP process overview, on December 22nd, 2023, PECO petitioned to modify its DSP-5 SMA to add a new optional, entirely optional Appendix I, which incorporates the International Swaps and Derivatives Association 2018 U.S. Resolution Stay Protocol. The Commission approved PECO's petition on February 1st, 2024. So RFP bidders that adhere to this protocol can elect for both the bidder and PECO to execute Appendix I at the point of contract execution. And RFP bidders that intend to execute Appendix I will indicate this to us in the Part 1 proposal. Now, this next section is going to provide an overview of the stages of the RFP process. So we'll start off here with the schedule. The RFP process is going to kick off this week with the opening of the Part 1 form, and then it's going to proceed over the next 4 to 5 weeks. The application process is in 2 parts. First, applicants are going to submit their Part 1 proposal with their qualification materials beginning Feb 15th, that's this Thursday, when we open the Part 1 form. The Part 1 proposal must be submitted by noon on the Part 1 date on February 27th. Then applicants that qualify are going to be notified by us that they can submit a Part 2 proposal on the Part 1 notification date on February 29th. The following day, an applicant can begin submitting the Part 2 proposal materials, and this includes posting pre-bid security. The Part 2 proposal due date is March 7th. Bidders are notified whether they've qualified to submit bids on the Part 2 notification date on March 11th. And then the bid date is the next day on Tuesday, March 12th. Qualified applicants will have an opportunity to practice the bid submission procedures in a training that's held the week prior on March 6th. Also important to note is by March 13th, the day after the bid date, the independent evaluator will submit its report on the RFP to the commission, and then the commission will render a decision by close of business on March 14th. So the RFP results on the bid date are contingent on final PUC approval. As I mentioned, we're going to submit a confidential report on the winning bids to the PUC by the day after the bid date, and then the commission will issue a decision within 1 business day of receipt of that report. Then after 15 days of the close of the solicitation, some information, including the average winning bid price, will be posted to the website picoprocurement.com. And Matt's going to touch on this posting a bit more later in the presentation. So the proposal process is entirely online. You're going to submit the Part 1 and Part 2 materials through online forms or by email. These materials include providing required information about the bidder and some supporting documents. Bidders are also required to upload or email signature pages that we refer to as inserts. These inserts are provided by us in Microsoft Word format, and each insert contains the instructions for completing and signing appropriately. The pre-bid letter of credit, which must be used for posting pre-bid security with the Part 2 proposal, is submitted to the independent evaluator as an electronic PDF file to picoprocurement@nera.com. So as I mentioned, both the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals require submission of inserts. These inserts are already posted to picoprocurement.com on the documents page under the supplier information section of the website. Applicants that are new, meaning they have not qualified in a solicitation under DSP-5, will need to download the zip file labeled P1 inserts new bidders. Applicants that have qualified in a solicitation under GSP 5 but did not have winning bids should download the zip file labeled P1 inserts previously qualified bidders. And then applicants that have had winning bids in a solicitation under GSP 5 will use the zip file labeled P1 inserts default suppliers. And it's important to start with the right set of inserts. So if you have any questions about your status as new, previously qualified, or default supplier, please do contact us. Also, so you know, we currently posted a zip file labeled P2 inserts early, and this contains the inserts that are required with part 2 and need a signature. So we post that early because if you'd like to have your officer sign all inserts for part 1 and part 2 at one time, because that's more convenient, you can go ahead and do that, and you can submit those inserts early during the part 1 window. So if you're a new applicant and you haven't registered for an account to access the online forms to submit your proposal, you should go ahead and do that now. You can register by going to PICOProcurement.com and clicking on the Contact Us link on the left-hand side, and then clicking on the Register for an Account link. Alternatively, you can go ahead and send us an email directly to PICOProcurement.com with the information that's requested here. And so, you know, it's the individual that registers for the account that's going to receive an email prior to the part 1 window with instructions to activate the account. Current account holders do not need to re-register through the website or by email. A current account holder is an applicant that qualified to participate in a solicitation in 2022 or later, or an account holder that registered in 2022 or later. So if you fall into this bucket, you do not need to re-register, but you will have to reactivate an account in order to access the form. So for a bidder that qualified to participate in a solicitation in 2022 or later, it's the representative that's going to receive an email with an activation link prior to the opening of part 1. If you're an account holder as of 2022 but did not participate, then again, it's the individual that registered for that account that's going to receive the email with an activation link. We're also going to send instructions to access and complete the online forms to current and new account holders prior to the opening of part 1. And these instructions will include screenshots of how to activate your account. So if you have any questions, you can always get in touch by email with PICOProcurement@nero.com. The URL to access the online forms is dspproposal.com. Once your account is active, you can navigate there through the proposal site or through the RFP website by clicking on the links, or you can go directly to this URL. So this next section provides some details on the contract and rates. PICO uses the uniform SMA that was developed for DSP 3 with some EDC specific provisions included. Appendix D to the SMA includes the PJM billing statement line items and identifies the responsible party, either PICO or the default supplier, for each item. Default suppliers must complete an Appendix H each year. Appendix H is the form of generation supply report, and it requests a percentage breakdown of the energy supplied by source for the year. The completed appendix should be provided to PICO by March 31st of each calendar year. This slide provides the credit requirements under the uniform SMA. For the fixed price products, credit exposure to PICO is based on a calculation of mark-to-market exposure that is net of accounts receivable or accounts payable to the supplier. For the spot price product, the credit exposure begins at $250,000 per tranche and is recalculated each month. Whether a supplier has to submit financial guarantees during the term of the SMA will be dependent on a credit evaluation that's specified in the contract. Each RFP bidder will receive the results of the credit evaluation based on their financial documents and ratings that they provide in the part 1 proposal, along with their part 1 notification. So that's provided well ahead of contract execution for winning suppliers. If a financial guarantee is required, it can be posted in the form of cash, a letter of credit, or in the form of a guarantee. and there are standard forms of the guarantee and letter of credit that are provided as exhibits to the uniform SMA. Default suppliers are responsible for providing alternate energy credits during the term of the uniform SMA for PECO to comply with the Alternative Energy Portfolio Standard Acts, as well as other orders, regulations, and rules. So an alternate energy credit is issued for each megawatt hour of generation from a qualified alternative energy system. All solar credits must be compliant and eligible to be retired in Pennsylvania in accordance with Act 40 from 2017, and all Tier 2 credits must also be compliant in accordance with Act 114, signed into law in November 2020. If any requirement under the AEPS Act changes during the term of the SMA, default suppliers are responsible to comply with any new obligations. The current obligation for each type of AEC is provided here at the bottom of this slide. During the transaction confirmation process, each winning supplier will be required to specify the average cost of each type of AEC, non-solar Tier 1, solar Tier 1, and Tier 2. Under the terms of the uniform SMA, a default supplier's AEPS obligation may be reduced by a number of AECs allocated to default suppliers in the transaction confirmation. The number of AECs per tranche to be allocated towards a default supplier's obligation is provided on this next slide. A note that any PECO AECs that are allocated to a default supplier's AEPS obligation do remain the property of PECO and are not transferred to the supplier. So here is a table that provides the allocation for March 2024. In regards to rates, the default service rates for a class are calculated on the basis of prices determined through the RFP, and they incorporate a quarterly true-up and administrative costs. For the residential class, rates also include purchases by PECO to serve approximately 1% of default load. In September 2021, PECO introduced time of use default service rate options for the residential and small commercial default service customers with smart meters. The TOU options are not applicable to customers in PECO's customer assistance program. There's a default service rate calculation model that's posted to PECO's website. Suppliers can view that model through the link provided here at the bottom of the slide. And on this final slide in this section, we provide just some details on PECO's agreement with the New York Power Authority. So under a multi-state agreement, PECO receives for the benefit of its residential customers an annual allocation of capacity and associated energy from the St. Lawrence Hydroelectric Project operated by the New York Power Authority. The allocation is dependent upon the number of residential customers that PECO serves, and it is 5.727 megawatts for energy year 2023-24. A supplier's residential tranches are the share of the default load for the residential class that excludes this allocation. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn the presentation over to Matt Pettit to continue with details on the RFP process.
Thank you, Katie. So over the next several slides, I'll be discussing the details of the requirements and the process for the RFP. So this will include both the part one and part two process. And this is not necessarily an exhaustive summary of the entire process. So we do encourage you to consult the RFP rules as well as the addendum. So again, there are two parts to the proposal, the part one proposal to become qualified and the part two proposal to become eligible to submit bids. Only RFP bidders that have successfully completed the part one proposal can move on to the part two proposal. In addition, prior to the part one proposal, there is an alternative guarantee process, which is strictly optional and is geared toward RFP bidders that have corporate policies which preclude them from using the standard form of the guarantee, which is appended to the uniform SMA. Bidders that have qualified pursuant to a complete Part 1 proposal will be able to participate in the bid submission training. And finally, bidders that have successfully completed the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals will become eligible to submit bids. So as I mentioned, the alternative guarantee process is for those RFP bidders that have corporate policies that preclude them from using the standard form of the guarantee. And in that case, bidders may submit an alternate form of guarantee and request consideration from PICO for use of that form. And the deadline for requests for review was January 30th. Separately, RFP bidders will also have the opportunity to propose modifications to the standard guarantee during the Part 1 window. So there will be three different types of RFP bidders for purposes of the Part 1 proposal. One will be new bidders, which will be those RFP bidders who have not previously qualified, which is to say they have not successfully completed a Part 1 proposal under DSP 5. The second type of RFP bidder is a previously qualified bidder. This type of bidder is one that has previously qualified, which again means that they have successfully completed a Part 1 proposal, but have not executed a uniform SMA for tranches 1 under DSP 5. And the third type of RFP bidder is a default supplier. And this is a designation for those bidders that have previously qualified and executed a uniform SMA for tranches 1 under DSP 5. The second and third types of bidders may be eligible to use an abbreviated Part 1 proposal process. So there are six discrete components to the Part 1 application. Bidders will provide contact information, including the name and address of the bidder, the designation of an officer who will be able to execute the contract and bind the bidder. And this individual will be responsible for signing all the required certifications and representations in both the Part 1 and Part 2 applications. The designation of an authorized representative who will serve as the point of contact, and optionally the designation of nominees who will be copied on correspondence between the bidder and the independent evaluator. In the second section, bidders will provide financial and credit information, including quarterly financial statements and credit ratings for the entity on whose financial standing the bidder is relying. So that could be the bidder's own financial standing or that of a guarantor. And additional information will be required for bidders submitting a proposal under an agency agreement. In the third section, bidders are asked to provide information to prepare the uniform SMA. So in the event the bidder goes on to become a winning bidder, that information would be used to prepare the SMA, and if the bidder elects not to provide this information with the Part 1 proposal, then they will have to provide it after the bid date, assuming, of course, they become a winning bidder. So bidders will also have the opportunity to propose modifications to both the letter of credit that is appended to the uniform SMA that would be used during the supply period, as well as the pre-bid letter of credit that is used to provide financial guarantees with the Part 2 proposal. Bidders can provide modifications throughout the Part 1 date, but before doing so, we do encourage you to look at the modifications that have already been approved by PICO for use in the pre-bid letter of credit, which are available on the RFP website. And additionally, if the proposed modifications that you submit contain the same modifications as a previous solicitation, then the modifications will not be reviewed again, but you may request that the independent evaluator email to you PICO's assessment of the prior submittal. If you do choose to propose modifications, they should be provided in Microsoft Word with track changes clearly showing all modifications that you are proposing. PICO will then review the changes, and responses will be provided within 2 business days for the standard pre-bid letter of credit and the standard guarantee. And for the post-bid letter of credit, the review will take 7 days. Any newly approved modifications for this solicitation will then be added to the list of acceptable modifications and posted to the RFP website ahead of the Part 2 proposal for use in the Part 2 proposal and beyond. So again, I mentioned that the Part 1 proposal consists of 6 components, and we discussed the first 3. So the 4th section will require bidders to make certain certifications and representations. So for example, the information that is provided in the Part 1 proposal is true and complete to the best of the officer's knowledge. Bidders will be able to submit the representations required by the Part 2 proposal in their Part 1 proposal for early processing. And again, the officer will be required to sign all of these certifications and representations. So in the event they're unavailable to sign the Part 2 representations during the Part 2 window, we make this option available. For RFP bidders or bidders who are relying on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor, there will be additional requirements. In these circumstances, there are additional documents that are required for the execution of the uniform SMA. Bidders to whom this applies will be able to submit drafts of these documents with their Part 1 proposal. And lastly, there is a section in the online Part 1 form for justification of omissions where bidders can explain the reasoning for any information they were unable to provide. And all materials for the Part 1 proposal are due by noon on Tuesday, February 27th. So part of the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals will require the bidder to complete inserts, which are separate documents in Microsoft Word format. The way in which a particular insert must be signed and submitted is detailed in the header of each insert, and there are different streams through which the signature and submission process can progress. So the bidder may use a digital signature so long as it is accompanied by an additional document or information that verifies the identity of the signatory. The bidder in certain circumstances may use an electronic signature so long as it is emailed to picoprocurement@nira.com either from the signer or with the signer on copy. And lastly, the bidder may use a notarized signature where the insert will be printed, signed, scanned, and uploaded to the online form. So following a bidder submission of the online form, the independent evaluator will promptly review the proposal. And during the review process, the bidder's account will be temporarily locked. The bidder will receive either a complete notice, meaning all required information for the Part 1 proposal has been provided, or the bidder will receive a deficiency notice. And in either case, the bidder will be advised about the status of its proposal on the same day if materials are received before noon Eastern or on the following business day otherwise. In the event a bidder receives a deficiency notice, the notice will detail the items which require correcting or clarifying, and the bidder will generally have until the deadline of the Part 1 proposal or one business day to respond to the notice. For those bidders that successfully complete the Part 1 proposal, they will receive a Part 1 notification, and this notification is expected by Thursday, February 29th. In addition to being notified that you have become qualified by completing the Part 1 proposal, you will also receive additional documents that are necessary for your continued participation in the proposal process. And that will include a credit assessment based on the financial information that you will have submitted with the Part 1 proposal. You will receive a customized bid form and instructions on the bid submission process. And you will also receive confidential login information so that you can participate in the bidder training and so that you can submit bids on the bid date. So moving on to the Part 2 proposal, all bidders will be required to provide a number of certifications and representations. And as I mentioned before, these can be provided during the Part 1 window if you would like to do that. Certain bidders have additional requirements. So for example, those bidders that are relying on the financial standing of a guarantor would be required to provide an intent to provide a guarantee from the guarantor. And those bidders are asked to provide information to prepare the guarantee. If the bidder is a foreign entity or is relying on the financial standing of a foreign entity, then that bidder is asked to provide the documents that will be required with the uniform SMA. Finally, all bidders will be providing a pre-bid letter of credit, and I will provide more detail on this on the next slide. But just as a note, the letter of credit must be submitted only via electronic means in PDF format to the independent evaluator at picoprocurement@nira.com, and hard copy versions will not be accepted. All Part 2 proposals are due on March 7th. So all bidders will provide a pre-bid letter of credit in an amount of $250,000 per tranche that the bidder intends to bid on the residential and small commercial products, and $125,000 per tranche on the CCI product. For a bidder that intends to bid on all available tranches for the residential and small commercial products, the maximum amount of the pre-bid letter of credit will be $7.5 million, and the maximum amount required to bid on all tranches for the CCI product will be $500,000. Now, it is possible that a bidder is not eligible to bid on all tranches, and that would be true if the bidder has a binding bidder-specific load cap. And this bidder-specific load cap is also why the independent evaluator issues customized bid forms to each bidder. For purposes of submitting the letter of credit, each bidder must use the standard form of the pre-bid letter of credit as posted to the RFP website, and incorporating only approved modifications to the pre-bid letter of credit, which is also posted to the RFP website. So that will complete our overview of the requirements of the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals, and I'll now discuss the bid submission process as well as the post-bid process. So a bid is a price in dollars per megawatt hour for one tranche of a product. It is automatically rounded to the nearest cent using standard rounding rules. The officer of the bidder will have certified that the bid is binding until 6 business days after the bid date. And the bid must be sufficiently supported by the pre-bid security, and we will confirm this is the case when we receive your bid form. Bids will then be evaluated by the independent evaluator on a price-only basis. So here's an example of the bid form, and prior to the bid date, each bidder will be provided a personalized bid form to be submitted on the bid date. Section 2 of the bid form provides the area for the bidder to enter prices, wherein the bids in each cell serve as a bid on a single tranche. The bid form will provide running totals for your convenience, and additionally will provide a check as to whether you have exceeded any load cap you may have. The load caps will be hard-coded by us on a per-bidder basis prior to you receiving your bid form. On bid date, your bids must be submitted between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, March 12th. Bids are submitted online through a secure file transfer system, and we will call you and confirm receipt within 30 minutes of submission. Bidders will have the opportunity to correct errors if there are any, and for this reason, bidders are encouraged to submit early. Bidders will have a minimum of 10 minutes to submit any non-conforming bid form, and this process will be outlined to you in the bidder guide provided with the Part 1 notification. By 3 p.m. on the bid date, we determine provisional winning bids and inform bidders whether or not they are provisional winning bidders. And winning bids remain provisional until approved by the Commission, and the decision will be made by March 14th. Bidders may participate and are encouraged to participate in a training session on March 6th, at which time members of our team will be available to answer questions, and bidders will be able to practice the bid day procedures in full. So following our notification to winning suppliers, bidders will be asked to provide information to prepare the uniform SMA and guarantee if they were not provided with the Part 1 proposal. The Commission will issue a decision by the second business day following the bid date, at which time we provide PICO with the uniform SMA, transaction confirmations, and guarantee. PICO will then execute the contract documents and send the documents to winning suppliers. Bidders will execute and return the contract documents, as well as post any additional security as necessary. So 15 days after the bid date, certain information will be posted and announced by us, namely the weighted average winning bid price by product and the number of tranches of each product procured. Of note is the names of winning suppliers will not be released. And now to round things out, I will provide some information related to the RFP website. Again, the website is PICOProcurement.com, and it is the central source of information relating to the RFP. It has the supplier and regulatory documents, a data room with historical data, a calendar page with important dates, a contact us page to register to receive email announcements relating to the RFP, as well as an archive page of postings from past solicitations for reference. And that archive page will also have the results from those prior solicitations. So please feel free to send us any and all questions either through our online portal, which is pictured below, or by email at picoprocurement@nira.com. We aim to answer questions within 2 business days, and we post these questions online after removing any identifying information. And so that will round things out for the presentation portion of the webcast.